Welcome to Wired on Development Interviews. Today we're talking with Cole Galloway. Cole is a physical therapist who is probably best known for his work with Go Baby Go. That's certainly how I came across him. But he is so much more. A social design scientist, I think, at heart. A professor, a researcher, and an innovator. A neuroscientist with a postdoc in developmental psychology. He is changing the rehabilitation world through enriched environments for brain neuroplasticity. And he's on a mission to make technology not only functional, but beautiful and affordable to the masses in the real world. This interview will make you smile. It might even make you cry. It'll definitely make you think outside the box. Enjoy.
Get Wired on Development.
Galloway, thanks for joining Wired on Development. I'm so pleased you could join us this morning.
Thanks for asking me. It's going to be exciting.
So I generally like to start off just really understanding the journey where you've come from, how you got into physical therapy in the first place.
It's a torturous, adventurous journey that seems to be heating up every 6 minutes, hours, or 6 days or months. It's been a wild ride and only getting wilder. I grew up in the southern U.S. To a pretty eclectic group of primates. They were scientists and musicians and teachers. And I thought that everybody had sort of poets from New Orleans in their house and musicians, and that science was always a thing that was talked about. So I grew up thinking that science and music and art and creativity all went together. It was only later that I found out that that was sometimes illegal to try to mix those. But and then I went off to college in the U.S. At the University of Southern Mississippi. Go Golden Eagles. And I was going to be a Jane Goodall. I wanted to study monkeys in the jungle. Now that I'm much, much older, I feel like I study monkeys in the jungle, which is just awesome. And so I've achieved my goal. At that point, back in college, folks lied to me and said, hey, you can't do field work and have a family. And I really wanted to be a dad and a husband. So I was like, okay, I'll do something else. I love movement. And I mean, really love movement. Like I love watching humans move socially. And now I've realized that the mundane is actually where the magic is in terms of helping people regain some happiness and function, that kind of stuff. So I went off to PT school at the Medical College of Virginia, a little PT school that's really well known in Richmond, Virginia, and I had a great time. I saw lots of researchers. I thought that's really awesome, but that's not for me. I don't like reliability and validity research. I don't like meetings. I don't like standard kind of adult dress or adult thought. So this isn't for me. I'll go off to the clinic, and I went off to the clinic, a really great clinic at Woodrow Wilson Rehab Center outside of Charlottesville, Virginia, and treated true blue rehab folks, stroke, head injury, amputee, multiple sclerosis, just a little bit everything. And in that campus, which was at that time sort of a golden age, it was in the early 90s, I was treating, stroke folks for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And I was treating my traumatic brain injury folks that I grew to really love and have gotten back to recently. For months and months. And we also had a community college style campus on our rehab campus. So I thought, again, everybody comes into rehab, you get acute care, which is medical stabilization. You go through rehab and you, on the same campus, you get to go off and learn, all the social rules after a traumatic brain injury. You work on your outpatient PT while you're going to classes and learning how not to address girls and how not to stand too close, but not too far away, and all the social stuff you have to get. I got frustrated with treating arms after brain injury. Legs seem to come back pretty easily, and you can stiffen a leg and get around. You can't stiffen an arm and get around. You can't. I was just really frustrated with that. A friend of mine went off to get his PhD, and I went, he's smart. Maybe I'm smart enough to do that. So I went off to University of Arizona to kind of in a quick 3 or 4 years, I'll find out how to treat stroke arms, be back home by dinner, and everything will be great, and I'll be a clinician. And I went there to University of Arizona with Gail Koshlan and Doug Stewart and Andy Fugelvan, these amazing scientists who also wore shorts and flip-flops every day in Tucson. So I was like, holy shit, this is it. I thought clinic was it, but no, this is it. I get ideas and tacos and my family's enjoying here and it's sunny every freaking day and I can play, you know, I can ski in the morning and play golf or tennis in the afternoon. What are you talking about here? I love the science stuff. But I really grew to hate the engineering aspects of adult neuro rehab, which was where my field was with arm, shoulder, elbow, wrist movement. I was doing pointing to different directions around a clock and trying to find general principles. That's where I learned biomechanics is in the brain. The brain understands the plant. For the, you know, the engineers, the controller understands the plant. And to move any one joint, you have to understand how to move all of them and the consequences. So I learned a lot that I would apply later, but I just hated the fact that everybody was treated like a dashpot, a controller, there was boxes. I wanted to get back to that clinical thing where there's organic primates in an enriched environment. So I jumped ship from adults and went to work with Esther Thieland at Indiana, which of course was just like, oh my gosh, I've gone to the Mecca. This chick knows what she's doing. I called her up. I think she was either in San Diego or in France. And I said, Dr. Thieland, I know you from reading in PT school, which I never paid attention to her readings in PT school, chaos theory and dynamic systems and stuff. And then here I'm talking to the person and she was like, who are you? I said, I must do a postdoc with you. I must. I've got a young baby. My oldest son, Nicholas, was born in Tucson. I'm seeing that I really want to study flapping to reaching. That I think the principles of helping people reach after stroke or head injury are in those developmental, behavioral, neuromechanical things. But I don't know how to study that. And she goes, okay, come and study with me. So I was with her for almost 2 years. She would ask me sometimes, don't I pay you enough to wear something other than shorts? And I would tell her, no, woman, you don't. We had a great time. It was an incredible lab. People that know her knew her as just an amazing person. She was much more amazing than anybody that just superficially knew her. She was an unbelievable mind, and she was a mom. She was a mom scientist. And remember, I've been told you can't do that. You can't have your personal thoughts about babies and life bleed into your professional work. That's not. And here I was meeting someone that has started out watching wasps move and expecting to have fixed action patterns, right? FAPs. And she didn't see that. She saw diversity of movement in these simple insects, seemingly simple insects. And then she changed that over to kicking in babies, first looking for central pattern generators and some kind of stable circuitry that explains this stable behavior. And what she saw was, kicking babies kick all different types of ways. They're exploring a landscape. And my mind was just blowing, you know, oh my gosh. And if anybody's never read Esther Thieland's work, read it for so many different reasons. If you need to learn how to write scientifically, read her work. It's painless. The complexity comes from individual simple statements put into a sort of a systematic conglomeration. That's her thought about writing. She wrote all the time. Very strange writing process, but it was, I mean, you can learn so much. Pediatric therapists need to go and read Esther Thieland's work, for a lot of reasons. She started out looking at central pattern generators and ended her life talking about how movement drives cognition. And she was fearless in that. And she got crushed by the developmental psychology establishment when she showed that in the A not B object permanence paradigm, you don't need an object. You just need perseverative movements. That perseveration was a key aspect of development. So she took that paradigm, that classic object permanent paradigm, and showed it's not about objects. She took the object away. She could get the same behavior just having the child reach six times to one location. And then she did experimental stuff like change the baby's posture. So you did the six trials of the A location to the left. She had you sitting and then she had you stand up and you didn't make the error. You didn't go to the A location when she showed you the B location. So changing posture affected what everybody would said was the classic cognitive test for object permanence. So, and I got to see her not only have insights in that, and her insights came from looking at the everyday second-to-second movements of what the baby did in the paradigm. And she got that from being a mom. She got her PhD after her kids went to high school. Right. And she never lost that sort of that grassroots blue collar, we would call it in the U.S., a blue collar aspect to her science. And so my science people ask me, what is it? I'm like, it's blue collar science. It's ground, it's science for a use. So I left there and went to Delaware, University of Delaware, a great place for a junior clinician researcher, where I was given time and mentoring and started to get federal funding, traditional federal funding for kicking and reaching. On the back of Esther, I wrote no special grants at that point. She was on those grants and people went, yep, got to be good. That's a little bit of a different time in the granting world. About 5 to 7 years ago, life took a turn. I experienced some anxiety and depression and a big life change in my personal life. And it triggered a need for more grounded real world stuff. I have been doing work with baby robots. National Science Foundation did it, and it's very good basic work showing that you don't need to crawl and walk to get the cognitive and language bump. You just need to have independent mobility.
Right.
We did some work with robots and everybody loved it except one group. And that was families. And they loved it, but they kept asking, where's the clinical device? 6 months of being asked like, yeah, this is all great. But the only people were lining up after the seminar were parents going, where is this? I was getting, you know, voicemail back into voicemail time with crying parents, please, please, please make a commercial device. So we went to Toys R Us, the toy store in US, and we took down toys and we started modifying them. And that's basically what we've done on the mobility, the powered mobility aspects for the last 7 or 8 years. And now we're enjoying, you know, 70 chapters of Go Baby Go, this movement for social mobility. And we do it yourself. We user center design it. We give it away as an open source, unownable entity, and which is super amazing for communities and super confusing for the establishment, which is also awesome. People cannot figure out how in God's name do you manage a 70 chapter organization and why aren't you branding it? Why aren't you owning it? Why aren't you doing that? And it's like, well, you don't need to own anything. You don't need to have meetings to have something spread. You just need to have thought and use a process in which you rapidly give people control of their own destiny. And then you have people all over the world that want to build cars for kids and they want to do it their way. And organize their own fundraising. We've got chapters, little chapters that have no business getting big money, getting millions of dollars from corporate America. Love it.
Yeah.
So that's where we are today.
It's been awesome, actually, just watching that whole movement grow. And I just wonder if you had an original vision for it.
It's like Dr. Evil. I have an evil lair where it's on a volcanic island outside of New Zealand, and we planned it all. We actually knew that I'd be talking to you today. It's on years ago. If we can just get on the Wired On podcast, it's one more way to make America great again. So yes, what we planned, if we had any stroke of genius, it was to trust that when you ask users, being families and kids, what they need, and then you do just that. You don't do interest-based research. I hate that now. I hate hearing someone say, I'm interested in cerebral palsy. I'm interested in stroke. In research, it's very common to go, ooh, I'm super interested in cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy sucks from what I hear. But there's interest-based research, and these are good-meaning people. But we just basically asked communities, what do you need? In fact, it wasn't even asking, right? They came to us and said, we need a cost-effective, affordable, lightweight, small, powered device. We built a modified ride-on car, and we keep doing it, and we share hardware lists. And luckily, we had this thing called the internet and social media, and we thought, heck, let's just post hardware lists and videos. And we did that enough before my university caught on and said, stop doing that. We stopped it, but it was too late. It was too late. People started asking, how do you get to be a chapter? all this is community driven. All this is community pulled. Sam Logan and I, Sam is at Oregon State now. He and other people that have worked with me were the brainchild of a lot of the organization. And we tried to stop Go Baby Go. We tried to shut it down because I don't know about you, but I don't need 20 or 30 or 40 more emails from people around the country and eventually around the world going, I have a sweetie. Here's his picture. He's 3 years old and he can't move around. Please help me. There's a special place in hell for deleting that email, right? I mean, you know, and I think researchers in their heart of hearts would like to have impact way beyond publications and presentations. So I was game for that. It was orgasmic to go, wait a minute. People seem to be counting on me. I'm like Batman. What? I can help them? So we just sort of gave it away. People started asking for chapters. We didn't have a chapter system. We're like, yeah, to be a chapter, I guess you need some engineering oversight and you can use our logo if you want. And yeah, that's good. I mean, can I talk to you for an hour to find out you're not a creep? Yeah. And so chapters started and then it was like, well, we got 20 chapters and the first chapters were people that were in it to win it. They were in it for the research, advocacy, educational benefits. They wanted their careers. Most of the first 20 chapters have become what's called super chapters in my mind. They're people that have actual workload. Some of them, majority of their workload is on Go Baby Go research and workshops. So that started the work, the chapter thing. And then the media kept coming, you know, kids driving their way to the future. This, you know, right after the last stabbing on US television, you'd be like, you know, the little palette changer would be like, yep, 15 people shot in the head. And now let's go down to University of Delaware where they're giving kids the ability to rock and roll. And then corporate America came by and went, hey, can we donate to you? That seems super cool. Can we have a workshop and donate? Can we turn this into something really neat? So it's got out of hand. And, you know, the NIH, National Institute of Health, National Science Foundation have still funded our work now. So the U.S. public has funded, taxpayer dollars have gone to fund a modified toy car. We just got results from the R21, our two-year study, motor, cognition, receptive expressive language, fine and gross motor, Bailey 3 scores, crushed control databases with a full year of ride-on car use. So our families in Cleveland, through Cleveland State, collaboration with Cleveland State, they did almost daily rides with their kids in a sit-stand-powered walking 3-in-1 Fisher-Price all-terrain vehicle for a year. And they maintain a fun index. That's a formal measure we have. How much fun was this? 0, no fun, 10, you know, a fun index. And they did great with their upkeep. We maintained the fleet and we crushed some retro active control databases of Bailey 3 with kids with Down syndrome. And now that's the new grant that we were talking about offline, just submitted for a first phase 1 clinical trial.
That's amazing. Go back right to the beginning. What was your first car like? Was that a sit-stand one as well?
The first car was actually an ATV that we actually, so it's the same car we do the 3-in-1 now. David Glansman, who at that time was a high school student in the area I am in Delaware, who's since gone to University of Pennsylvania, a really top tier school, and is about to graduate. He's the first guy that built stuff. We went to Toys R Us, went and got some pool noodles and a backboard from a swimming pool shop. We went to Joann Fabric and got some Velcro and built this car. And the first cars were all Lightning McQueens. And we lucked into a Lightning McQueen because it's a deep-seated car. It's got some design features. You know, at this point, Fisher-Price was not working with us. Now we're buddies with Fisher-Price, which is just an awesome organization to work for. Gary Collins and their Power Wheels product team is amazing to work for. They have a lab. They look at thousands of toys with thousands of kids in their child development lab. But we used Lightning McQueen, which had eyes and a smile. And it also had some other design features. It was low seated so that kids with postural issues could sit in it with not a lot of modifications. We used a big red switch. Big Red Switch is a great example of what's wrong with assistive technology, medical technology, because this is a $60 switch. It's really about a $1 switch inside the housing. And the housing is super cool, the plate with springs, but it, you know, it's $60 right. because it's medical, and it's medical because it comes in a medical journal. That's in jargon terms, gotta call shit on that. That's not okay. That's for-profit healthcare at its worst. So we put pressure. I mean, you can hear the social justice in our movement is upfront and transparent, and we're coming after you. And the industry, the assistive technology industry, is starting to respond. And I take a lot of pride in the movement putting very positive pressure, putting pressure with a smile. This is not, you know, picketing and demanding with an ironclad fist and a frown. It's actually just kicking ass with 6,000 cars planet-wide, 11,000 Facebook followers. And that's terrifying enough. We don't have to yell. We can just point out that a 200-pound power chair for a 20-pound payload is not okay. And we know why you're doing it. You're doing it for cost and manufacturing, which makes total sense. But you can't put an adult base and just put a small chair on top and call it a day. And therapists have to stop taking that. And families have to realize they don't have to take that anymore. I think one of your questions was, you know, how can we help funding? It's start your own thing. Let's start a movement to change funding. We're starting to get prescriptions for ride-on cars. That's weird.
Yeah, because that puts us in a whole different category.
Yeah, and people are really, really interested in, like, shouldn't ride-on cars be FDA approved? I'm like, do it if you want to. They're a toy. And again, that the second people want to pigeonhole Go Baby Go as a movement, or the ride-on cars, or the portable harness systems we're using now, or even our adult stuff with the Go Baby Go Cafe, into something, it's very hard. You know what? People are asking me all the time, what kind of cognition do you want to advance with the ride-on cars? I'm like, well, I think of it as a mobile learning environment. I don't know. Come help us study whether it's joint attention or executive function or means end or A not B or regulation of optic flow, perceptual stuff, affordances. I don't get that. I want you to play with friends so much so that you are included. I've arced all the way to that my job is to help people co-create their lives through mobility. And I'm accused of not being a PT enough or not being in the medical model enough. That's awesome. You know, I'm a reluctant researcher. I think research is a tool. Medical model is a tool. It's not the end. I think outpatient neuro is a dead dinosaur. I think it's dead for rebuilding and having people retrain their brain. Enriched environment research suggests that there's only one way to really, really, really trigger value-dependent plasticity, and that's an enriched environment. And if you go into most outpatient clinics in the U.S., and you bring plasticity researchers who look at the brains of rats for a living, like I have, into an outpatient neuro physical therapy, occupational therapy situation, and ask them, what do you think for brain growth, regrowth, a decrease in apoptosis, a neurogenesis of the of hippocampus or temporal lobe or frontal lobe? What do you see? You know what they say? Oh, it's awesome. They go, why are you depriving? Why are you putting these animals in a socially and physically deprived context?
Yeah.
Walking over a bodyweight supported treadmill isolated from kids isn't okay. And I knew bodyweight supported treadmill training. We all know that. That's, you know, I got to see it with cats in Arizona. The real basic science stuff of cats walking on treadmills. And then people, of course, have used treadmills, and then it gets handed down to adult rehab. And as pediatric rehab folks, we're like abused spouses. We take whatever we get and we don't pitch a fit. You know, you shrink it and pink it from adult to infant and pediatric technology. And we just take it. We don't fight back. Nobody calls the manufacturers and say, you suck. We just sort of take it and we accommodate it. And we think there's no other options. So we thought, well, maybe there's another option. So I went to Ralph Cope and Steve Cope with Enlighten. And Enlighten LLC is the same company that provides the body weight support harnesses now, which is cool. You can find them on the web and order them. I have no financial connection to these guys. They just build pretty good equipment. And we asked them, hey, I want to put a body weight support system in a gymnasium. I was about to leave Delaware to go to another university, and Delaware said, here, have a stack of cash and stay here. So I took that stack of cash and I went to Ralph and Steve Cope and I said, I want to build the first gymnasium bodyweight support harness system, something that's socially embedded. And I had the Early Learning Center, 25,000 square foot mixed model childcare center, babies to 4 or 5 year olds. So kids with behavioral and physical and cognitive issues, right along typically developing peers. And so we did that. That was kind of an error that we had fun with it, but it wasn't functional. It's too big. And so Steve and I, unfortunately, Steve's passed away. But Steve and I talked about maybe the possibility of a portable unit. And he went off in one week and came back. And he had put this thing underneath a beach canopy, a tent that you would pull out at the beach. One of the ones that would, that fly away when you don't anchor them. So he put all the hardware for a frictionless bodyweight support system. You basically can move along a bar, and that bar moves along another bar. So you have three-dimensional access to a 10 by 10 space, 10 feet by 10 feet. And that ended up being a too lightweight. So we went to a King Kong canopy, something you'd see at a farmer's market. Same idea. And you can buy for $5,000 US, you can buy that portable harness system. It's in a ski bag on wheels. It's set up. I set these up every single week for our harness hangouts in Cleveland.
Harness hangouts.
Every
That's
other week.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't have multiple kids on the same harness usually. Cause it's a 50-pound payload. So we can have two or three American kids, even though our kids are chunky. They're not, we can still get two kids on there. European kids, you probably could put 8 kids on there, but US we're more a little heftier, ready for our American football. So we put a couple of kids in each harness and we stack those harnesses and you can see them on the Go Baby Go Facebook. You can see multiple kids with Down syndrome choking each other and walking up and down ramps. And we've got, the harness hangouts are awesome because we've got snacks for the moms off to the side. We're working on getting a margarita fountain or a chocolate fountain, something for the moms so that the adults can leave. The adults need to leave. They need to go away. And when you have the adults leave, guess what? The kids start to learn actual socialization. And basically they teach us what the next generation of harnesses have to look like. And we get pilot data on, training protocols and observational protocols with video coding. So we're back to keeping the community very participatory action. And I think if toddlers could have helped the Permobiles, the WYSIBUGs, the Pride, Quantum, the different manufacturers, Autobach, Tylite, if you had toddlers actually manning those advisory boards, we would actually have user-centered design. What we've got is adults making a decision for children, and that's a major philosophical, conceptual, ethical dilemma. So we have portable harnesses in multiple places around the U.S., gathering some data. They're super fun to use. It's very hard to go back. Once you put a kid in the harness system, and here's the key, it's not the harness. It's where you put the harness system, right? So you can take a harness system and put it smack dab in the quote unquote, the world's greatest clinical environment, and it'll be socially and physically impoverished. You put a harness system in a playground, back off, and let the kids play. And you've got the most advanced thing we think we know in terms of the science. Forget the heartwarming, sort of friendships and stuff. Let's talk about hard brain science. The harness systems are good. We then built a big girl 10 by 10 that can take 300 pounds. And we dressed it up like a cafe. And we put moderate to severe traumatic brain injury survivors a year post all the way to 27 years post. And we compared those folks 2 months of working 3 times a week to a control group. And you tell me what we found, right? Cognition, language, socialization. And these are on classic kind of tests of cognition. The trouble is the logic of bringing someone who is hurt in the real world and wants to get back to the real world. And you're bringing them from the real world into a pristine, impoverished environment in order to help them get back to the real world. It's just not going to work. It doesn't work if you're making an exoskeleton that's so ugly you wouldn't be caught dead in it. but yet that's what you think you're doing because you've either wanted to be a researcher all your life, you want to be have the serotonin, you get a serotonin burst from getting off on high tech. And until your mom has a stroke and you see the reality, you may never know that that exoskeleton will not function in the real world because of aesthetics, if anything. So let's just agree to stop building exoskeletons that chase kids away from, you know, everybody says, oh, well, Iron Man is a really cool thing. That's a movie. And chicks dig that for 2 hours. They're not going to date anybody that looks like Iron Man. You know, there's nothing better in my world than to hear from a grandparent or a parent that a 3 or 4 year old with severe types of movement or thinking differences got invited to a birthday party, not by a cousin or family member, but by a friend. I think friendships are actually what the entire rehab medical model needs to come clean. That's what we want. That's what the happiness research suggests, the social psychology research, behavioral economics. Everywhere you turn, like I was saying with the portable harnesses, once you use the portable harness in a little bit in an enriched environment with other kids, it is almost impossible to wrap your head around an impoverished social and physical environment. But I would challenge people to try these technologies out in the real world. You're not going to figure out how to use a bodyweight support system very easily in an impoverished environment. But if you'll put it where other kids are, and give the kid a little bit of time that's in the harness, a little bit of time to understand and incorporate the mechanics, it's really hard to then go back to a hands-on only approach in which an adult is there and the kids are stepping back. It's just a difference. It's a philosophical difference. I think it's a very modern. I think the theory is ready. The research is emerging. It's not a challenge to the profession. It actually provides even the new grad with a lot of satisfaction.
I kind of get where you're coming from a little bit more now, because as a PT, when I first started looking at the Go Baby Go cars, it was frustrating for me to have people just use them without adding in that extra sort of clinical element, so that you're kind of building in that therapy aspect of it as well.
Yeah, I think I love that kind of pressure and the greediness that I see in therapists when they're like, I don't want it just to be play. I want it to be more than play. So they check off the play very quickly. Okay, play's good. Play's good. Fun's good. But I'm greedy. I think therapists want to be involved in it. I think there's a lot of, I mean, anybody that's interested in the psychology, the meta science of this, it's a super sweet system to study. People are starting to come and going, I want to study the social justice aspects of this, or the ethical aspects, or, you know, just the information flow. There's a lot of master's and PhD dissertations, I think, just tracking these 70 chapters, and we'd happily help anybody do that. This is not a keep it for ourselves kind of thing, but I think your journey with it is very similar. I want to be involved. I don't like what I see completely, but they're doing it. And I think that's the great thing is that, and I just put that in the grant, either we can scientifically catch up or not. And I tell groups, I love saying this, Mindy, if you like this stuff, awesome. If you hate me and hate this stuff, awesome. It's going on and it's going to go on. 2 chapters a month. We have people contacting us going, I hope it's okay. I started 3 chapters in China. So, oh gosh, I love it. It drives my university bonkers, bananas.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a bit of a control freak.
What I love that, I love telling you, like, either you got to catch the train and influence it, and you can. You really can. You can do it your way. That's the whole thing, is like, you're not waiting for somebody else to do it. Build your own cars your way. Please share in the brand new forum, Go Baby Go Connect, CONNECT. It's for the first time, it's run by a high school first robotics club in Kansas City. They came forward and went, we would like to do our part by hosting a worldwide forum, which is a clearinghouse for ideas and hardware lists and do it yourself. So there's a place people can go to get the hardware list and best practices, ideas from people, but also to share. It doesn't work without sharing. And if you get close to it, it will suck you in. And whether that's a chapter trying to raise money, just invite the people that have the money to a workshop. No one gets out of a workshop alive. And then you see the kids hit a switch And they're eventually, whether it's seconds or 20 minutes later, their eyes change, their facial expressions change, the breathing through the ventilator changes. And the people that know and love them most look at me, and those grandmas look at me and go, I've never seen her smile like that. I've never seen her sit up like that. I've never seen her move that quickly. You know that, and even I underestimate an active brain that's allowed to move itself when it wants to. There is something wicked, wicked different. It's a different organ. These kids have been moved all the time passively. When they move the first time hitting a switch, which is a dumb switch, it's a dumb car. At the beginning and the end of this whole thing, we're talking about, you know, plastic toys. But in the middle, you're seeing a human right issue. And then to have a place like the United Nations, you know, consider inviting you because of the human rights aspect. It is hard for us that are mobile adults that are not caregivers of a child to do the right thing by kids. Look at the technology simply as an example of how bad we are. And we need to have more people demanding more because we can do better. We can do the 3-in-1 car that we do, the sit-stand power walker that was essentially created and designed off of Andrina Sabet at Cleveland State, who has a medical model background. She works for Cleveland Clinic and is our research manager for the R21. She's the one that came up. She couldn't have done it without her feet in both worlds. People often think that I'm the leader of the Go Baby Go movement, and I may be de facto leader, but I'm the first person to say, no, I'm not. I've been around probably the longest. I had a weird idea that Go Baby Go was a cool phrase. We built the first car. After that, we don't build any cars at Delaware, really. You know, and there's lots of pressures to, frankly, put a trademark on Go Baby Go, to charge chapters, to make a profit. And if that ever got too hot and it was too much to me, I could back off and not be Go Baby Go related. And that's pretty cool. So if people listening to me think, gosh, that's a great organization, that's so cool they do that, then I've completely failed. If they think, shit, they're dumb enough, I can do that, I can do better. In fact, I've seen their designs, they're horrible. I know for my kid, I need to do this, or my clinic needs to do this. Awesome sauce. I win.
What did you used to believe strongly that you no longer believe is true?
Oh, you can watch Monkeys in the Jungle as a professional and get paid for it and be home by 5 and have awesome kids and be a good dad.
So who are the monkeys, the researchers or the kids or the parents?
Shh, I'm watching everybody. That's a great question. Ooh, I've been asked a lot of questions. I've never been asked that. So what did I believe before that I don't believe anymore? Oh, I can give a trite answer that actually is a take-home message that I tell my 3 boys. I've got boys that are in their 20s, late teens and early teens. I used to not believe that things were really all that possible, that you can't really fight the man. Remember, I come from deep South where, you know, there was always a man to fight. There was a bad guy in terms of social issues. But what could I do? And I would really, it sounds so trite, but you hear it all the time from people that have quote unquote done it. My suggestion is just do it. Whatever it is you're wanting to do, do it and aim a little higher. Ask yourself, take your magic wand out and go, but what I'd really like to do, name those 5 things about life that you really like. Don't think professionally, think like personal and professional. I like hiking, I like chicks, I like pizza, I like travel, I like helping people. Put a circle around that. My oldest son is into theater and neuroscience, and his favorite things are the brain, improv theater, helping people, chicks, climbing rocks. And he found out that Second City, one of the big improv groups in the U.S., it's an improv empire for improv comedy. They have a wellness division. And he and I are going to do a study this winter on the impact of improv comedy boot camp on traumatic brain injury survivors, cognition, language, and socialization. So again, list your 5 or 6 things that you just love to do that wouldn't be work, put a circle around them, protect it, and then you probably have to start your own. But that's okay. You're ready. You know enough. to know you don't know much. And if you're a junior clinician, it's the perfect time to start your new thing. You don't know. You've had one course in peds. You don't have kids. You're going to sit and advise somebody on their family? That doesn't sound even right. That doesn't even sound legal, does it? Well, you're going to have to partner with them and your teammates. And you're probably going to have to do it differently than it's existing. And that means you're probably going to have to go out on your own in some ways. Perfect. Please do that, because I'm going to have a stroke soon. And right now, I'm going to be sent to the acute care rehab outpatient pipeline that exists right now. And that's messed up, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I want to be in a harnessed cafe, and I want to have a harnessed bicycle track, and I want to do trail runs with my kids, even if I can't stand and walk by myself. And I think the reality is kind of dark.
Well, I'll jump into the questions because we are running out of time, and you might have some interesting answers. So the first question says, I'm a PT in the Chicago area. Is there a Go Baby Go course coming to this area? How do I get more info about the courses?
The easiest way is to go on our Facebook, the UD Go Baby Go Facebook, and message me. You've got at least one chapter, if not multiple chapters, in Chicago. It's a hotbed of Go Baby Go. Right there at the Shirley Ryan Abilities Lab is one, the former Rehab Institute of Chicago. Chicago's a great, great place for community service. And community is sort of it's the birthplace of community activism in a lot of ways for the U.S. So, and if you can't find one, we'll help you start your own thing. It doesn't take much.
Are there specific motor skills you require the child to have before you put them into powered mobility, or do you put them in and just see what they can recruit to make it work?
All right, Mindy, what do you think the answer is?
I think you just put them in and see what happens.
Yeah, we don't know anything. Don't know a thing. And it's been funny. Can you do it with vents? Vent-dependent kids? I don't know. Medically complex and fragile kids? Oh, I don't know. We let the family lead. So if the family wants the kid in the car, we'll work it. And I don't know of a kid that hasn't eventually learned to push that button. Now, sometimes it's taken 20 minutes of them Velcroed their hand to the button, and they're going around and 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 around. 15 minutes is a long time for adults to wait. It takes you 9 months to walk, but you know, in the clinical environment, pretty impatient. Funding's not going to give you 9 months, you know, to hang out. So, and then I can remember we were in Connecticut, and that little sweetie started hitting the switch and stopped. Hit the switch, stopped, hit, stopped. I looked over at mom. She almost fainted. And that's the great thing is the database that moms and caregivers have, clinicians have, they'll be able to tell you when the slightest change is like, oh, see that little grimace? We don't ever get a grimace except for food and his favorite dog. He's got it. So families tell us like, holy moly. I've been around when we heard the very first laugh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know, a cackle. And I look over and again, a grandma and granddad are almost fainting. They're like, I do not understand. What did you do? What was in that car? And it's like, it's just a dumb old plastic car.
Yeah. It's just an awesome thing to be involved in. I mean, they've done some amazing adaptations here in New Zealand with taking like seating and putting them into the cars. It's amazing what you can do.
Oh, you can get carried away. That's another big aspect of this. It's so easy to hack. It's so easy to get carried away. And I just want to put a plug in. Juana Saros and Mary Lundy at University of North Florida have a National Institute of Health grant for a course they do with engineers and physical therapists. If people are interested in doing coursework, they will share all their course material to jumpstart that.
That's awesome.
And again, if anybody has follow-up questions, just get on our email, get on our Facebook and message me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next question. We love Go Baby Go, but are so frustrated that children in Europe and Canada have access to more child-friendly power chairs, such as the Bugsy or Wizzy Bug.
Yep.
How can we start a movement in the US to get this kind of equipment funded and to our kiddos?
Easiest way, get on Facebook or blog and start using cuss words. I mean, don't wait. Number one, don't wait. Number two, don't wait. Number three, don't wait. If you're already frustrated, take the next step. It may take a few drinks around other frustrated people. You guys get messed up and get pissed off and tear up a place and then come back with some sanity and organize a takeover of the world for good and put some pressure on Permobil and Pride and also contact the FDA and tell them it's high time that WYSIBUG came to the U.S. And these are not industrial grade adult wheelchairs. They don't need the same amount of testing. And I think FDA is getting educated on that, but we need to push grassroots efforts in the U.S. at least have a history of making an impact, and media is looking for that kind of stuff too. So again, contact us if you'd like for us to help organize or structuralize in your area. That's what we're here for.
Perfect. And then the last question is, what are the implications for increased walking time with poor alignment and biomechanics in your overhead harness systems?
Yes. Oh, everybody's worried about, yes, bad quality. They don't look right. Here's my take-home messages for me. This is my personal opinion based on the science and what I've seen. Number one, we don't do anything in high enough doses to worry about quality. Stop worrying about quality. It doesn't matter. If you don't do high dose value added, it will not matter to the bone or to the ligament or to the muscle or the brain. Review your science on how much dosage it takes to change those things. You know, it takes 6 weeks to lay down actin and myosin. So that's sort of the muscle's timeline. Tendon doesn't get direct blood supply, so it's probably a little bit longer for tendon. It needs high forces. Brain, you know, will change with value, enrichment, and reward, and co-activation of multiple areas in an actively problem-solving aspect. So putting a kid a treadmill on a few minutes or even an hour or so per week is not going to change much. It may change, you know, the quantity. But if you're talking about quality, you need dosage. Now, with the body weight support systems and maybe some new technology in which you're getting, you know, again, 80% of a toddler's waking hours is in mobility-related activities. And most of those, as our research and other people have suggested, it happens in a social realm. It happens within a foot or 2 feet of some other primate. So what OTs have been telling PTs for a long time, which is everything is socially embedded, looks to be true for kids. Okay, we kind of know that. So we have to embed our kids in meaningful, socially embedded or nested higher dose. So minutes of a home program per day. We worked our asses off and got 25 minutes on average 5 times a week for a year right on car use. We were doing everything we could do, Mindy. Home programs probably are getting a tenth of that, right? They're probably getting minutes on the dollar per day. Whereas the peers are getting 6 to 8 hours of waking social mobility. So until we get hours, and we know we've gotten above an hour in the portable harness systems with a lot of effort, but it has to be making moms and families happy, making baby engaged, that just right challenge. When you get above an hour a day, now we can start to talk about, is this too much for bone, ligament, brain, quality? Finally, a realistically based theory can help us versus the Bobath's ancient theory of shunting proprioceptive information, which we now know you don't shunt any information passively. It's an active process that starts at presynaptic facilitation and inhibition in the spinal cord. So, boy, it'd be nice to have an actual theoretically rich, valid discussion of quality, but we've got to get dosage. But it's coming. It's coming. So everybody hold on. We can argue at conferences and call each other names about quality finally, because in peds, we're going to get the dosage. And hopefully in adults too. And I have to say that in the U.S., this is not the way that the quote unquote top rehabs are going. The Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, RIC, is not going toward high dose community based. It's going to fancy impoverished tech. So, you know, if you want to get to that argument, if you want to use your gait analysis for quality, we've got a lot of information on quality. We just need to now get the dosage up to argue about whether we really need it or not. And you need to make a decision right now. If we can't do high dose, are you going to say movement is better no matter what it looks like? Or are you going to say movement is not okay. I'm going to stay with even lower doses. And that's sort of a, right now it's a professional opinion. I think in the next couple of years, it won't be. It will not be scientifically valid to choose very low dose, quote unquote, pretty movements over hours. But if I could offer you 2 or 3 hours per day of co-creative independent mobility for an infant, I could show you the results from that. It would be hard for most therapists to go, yeah, but I'm going to limit that because of prettiness and because of a fear of the future. But hopefully we'll get to be able, wouldn't it be awesome to have overuse injuries in our immobile kids? I'd love to have a hip bursitis because my kids are walking too much.
I'm going to pass on that, Cole. I think, you know, just getting kids moving has a very important place to play. But I think as PTs, our primary concern also needs to be musculoskeletal health.
Yeah, I would challenge you then this weekend, tie your ankles together and duct tape your mouth shut and sit in the corner of a public place for just an hour, not long, just an hour. Because I think when we make decisions as professionals, it's just tough. I want to err on the side of trying to understand my blind spots. And for me personally, being a mobile adult that doesn't caregive, I don't know if I can limit people's movement. Mm. I don't know if I can advise to limit social mobility. So I think right now there's some gray area. I think in the future it may become clearer, but we'll see. And I'm not saying give up on functional inequality. But right now we're getting minutes of socially isolated movement. And that to me is a recipe for absolute mental health issues. So
I fully agree with what you're saying about getting people moving. I certainly would never recommend limiting independent mobility. There's two sides of the scale that both need to be addressed equally.
Yeah, I think they can be. I think with the things like the 3-in-1, maybe some newer technology that's coming down, the wearable, supportive, and movement engaging fashions, we may not have to have that really strange dichotomy, that forced choice.
Yes.
I think options are going to help. Right now, there's not a lot of options, so we're building theories around what we have, which are very few options. So yeah, I think it's a false dichotomy, actually.
Yeah, brilliant. Who is currently noteworthy?
Oh, in the world?
In neurorehabilitation.
Not Impossible Labs. That's a laboratory in California that's an independent research and development facility. Go look at their stuff. Second City and sort of nonprofits that are outside the medical model that are doing enriched activities, whether it's stand-up comedian work for cognition or it's tango dancing for Parkinson's, rock climbing for kids with autism. There's a lot of, when you look outside of the medical model, where they actually in entities that perform in the world, they have the advantage of being in enriched environments. They already are there. Somebody that doesn't work in rehab per se, but is an inspiration, and you can sort of go, wow, holy mackerel, I thought Cole was nuts. He's just from Delaware. Who's, I don't even know where Delaware is. Is Jose Gomez Marquez at MIT. And just Google little things. And he makes medical devices out of small toys. And people used to go, ha ha. And now he's on the European Medical Council and they don't go ha ha anymore. He's a non-tenure track professor at MIT that doesn't publish very much. He's got about 1 billion people waiting for him to trip up to take his lab space. And this guy is an absolute joy to be around and a social justice warrior and a really good engineering designer. Who else? I mean, Mike Mersnick and the folks that do neuroplasticity for language communication movement and for occupational stuff is really cool stuff. Look at, and these are sort of outside of the PEDS model, which my principle for innovation is I can't innovate by looking at within my field. I have to innovate by having my field in mind, but I look everywhere else. So how people have attacked dementia and Alzheimer's with communities, building communities, the design of communities for all types of populations that would be called special or have atypical challenges really have some innovative things. Look at tracking humans in the real world, where you are, what you're doing. That technology is really becoming much more robust and affordable to include in a clinical package. For peds, look at all the STEM toys. This is the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics style toys for middle schoolers to program. Dot and dash is a set of toys. Why STEM toys? They're easy for middle schoolers to program, which means clinicians can program these, and some of these are mobility related. And so including these toys in your clinical practice can get nonlinear, kind of a little bit more enrichment if you can't get typical primates in there. You can get these toys that will run away and run back. They're engaging. They can be driven by clinicians. So that's another thing that we're exploring, is these easily programmable mobile toys that can be used as platforms. We can stack toys on them. We can stack different types of stuff. We can engage a population either solo or with other kids. That's what we use with our harness hangout, is we put the harnesses up. We put the snacks for moms, and then we get out the smart toys and the dumb toys, and we do a mix of different types
of
toys.
That's a great idea. Any best books to have in your back pocket?
If you haven't read Esther Thielen's stuff, that's a really easy thing. Other books. The Not Impossible Labs has a book that sort of is a chapter by chapter review of a lot of out of the box thinkers on sort of technology and training for populations. I don't read a lot of books, but I'm addicted to listening to podcasts like Wired On and TED Talks. I probably listen to 15 TED Talks a week. In my area, not in my area, really, really weird ones. There's some horrible TED Talks. They all have a similar, though inspirational kind of, this is what I've done.
Best advice to therapists who want to either start out in pediatrics or start out in research?
In pediatrics, have your own children. Rent them or have them. find a place that rents kids. No, you have to go spend time. If you haven't spent time a weekend with a kid with CP and their family, do that regularly. There's no substitute for understanding. You won't write a dumbass home program after spending a weekend with a family that has a real life rhythm.
That is brilliant advice.
Chillax too. You don't know anything. Perfect. Trust your friends and family and tell them. They have to be honest with you about telling you your blind spots. Fashion designer walked in their lab and went, "Why do you put exoskeletons on people? Ugly, so ugly you wouldn't be caught dead in them." And we went, And then when somebody does that, you can either decide to go, "No, but blah, 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 but I'm interested in this," or you can go, "Oh, thank you. You're hired. Don't ever leave." Yeah, be careful of your toxic environment. If you're in the medical model, you're walking into an impoverished environment. There's no way around it. It's not me saying that. It's not my personal opinion of that. That is what it is. And that's why we created the 10 by 10 cafe. It was a little enriched environment placed within, you know, the medical model. If you don't have artists and musicians and designers in your life, get them in your life and ask people that have no business telling you feedback about what you do, what you should do. Ask your grocer if you're having a problem at work, ask them, ask your baker. You get the croissant, eat the croissant there and talk to somebody there that has no business giving you feedback. And that's been really helpful and instructive as a design principle for us.
That is just awesome advice, Cole, and so lateral thinking. I love it. So the last question is, how would you advise therapists who want to develop excellence in the field?
Oh, excellence. What is excellence? I would say start by going, where are you in your station in life? Do you need to just be quiet for a little bit and learn? Don't be quiet too long. Jot down all the things that you see that are messed up. Look outside the model. Leave the building as much as you can. For example, people all over the country prescribe power wheelchairs to kids. and then those kids leave, and those therapists are not allowed to visit them in the community to see if the actual device works. The system is broken in the U.S. I don't know about around the world, but it's broken. And the only people that think the system isn't broken are the people that haven't been a participant in it. So go home with your clients, not in a creepy way. Don't stalk them. Get their permission. And seriously go home regularly. Hang out with typical kids, whether it's at least doing YouTube to see that 6-month-old typical kid is crushing your 6-month-old kid with Down syndrome. Oh, but Downs will walk at 2. Yeah, they'll walk at 2. Look at what a 2-year-old does, this typical developing. A 2-year-old could get up on a refrigerator. A 2-year-old can hotwire a car, start their own small business. And that Downs baby is just walking flat ground with high guard. Now look at the mental health of adults with Downs. Not mental IQ, but mental health. How much their quality of life. And don't be afraid to go to those dark places, because that's going to be your power. And you're very important. You care deeply about your clients. Your first priority is not your business, your paycheck, or your place of business. It's not your department or your chair. It's to your clients and their families. And when push comes to shove, that means you choose clients and families over anything else.
That is great advice, Cole. And yeah, I think that's such an important piece to just hold on to and kind of get stuck on the admin and the requirements.
Yep, and you're letting yourself, if you're buried in administration, you did this. You let yourself do that. So remember who you are, why you got into it, and we need you. Your clients desperately need you, but they need you in a way that's probably slightly different or wildly different than you think that they need you. They need you to help their sweeties make friends at 4. And when you work in a NICU, you need to be thinking about friends at 4. What am I doing? How much of my education? I heard just last couple of weeks, Cole, I don't have time to educate. I'm treating too much. I get told all the time how stupid I am and how dumb my ideas are and how it'll never work. You need to be around people that do that. They help you. Everybody needs an ex-spouse to tell you that you're just not that big a deal. No, seriously, you need to tell your friends and your family, I need honesty. I need somebody, because we haven't had a lot of that. And so like with exoskeletons or power wheelchairs or impoverished outpatient, you know, it can be so much different. We can have adaptive playgrounds that have harnesses everywhere, and that adaptive playground can be inside and you could own that clinic. Yeah. You can have, I've heard that you can have your own podcast and talk to people from around the world.
Oh, I really appreciate your time, and I've so enjoyed this conversation.
We didn't talk a lot about the sort of mechanics of research, and that research is not nearly as stodgy, and it doesn't have to be as slow and linear. The thing that's needed the most in research is for researchers to be required and feel empowered to make a difference around the kitchen table. It's an exciting time to be a researcher in technology, but you can do it way wrong if you do interest-based stuff that you're interested in. If you do community nestled problem solving with people under 20 as well, high schoolers and middle schooler robotics teams, you are likely to build a first generation technology that's set for the primate in the functioning world they are in. Super exciting to be at a place where you feel like you're innovative and significant, which are the two big categories for NIH funding, is you have to get high scores there. And I'm super excited, and I need in my own lab the highest quality creative. So I tend to look for postdocs and pre-docs that have a background in movement and social justice and arts and music and a little bit in design.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. You'll find links to everything we discussed in this interview at wiredondevelopment.com. And if you haven't already, whilst you're there, you can sign up for the Seriously Smart Snippets. These are bite-sized emails delivered weekly to your inbox with useful snippets from past interviews to enhance your learning and keep you inspired. Thanks for listening, and a special thanks to those of you that take the time to connect and send me your thoughts and feedback. It really does make my day. Cheers.